Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. In late fall of 2015, Zoe Wild saw a video on Facebook of a raft full of refugees that sank trying to get to the EU from Turkey. Everyone except a young girl and a baby had drowned, including the girl's fiancé. That video was the final straw for Zoe Wild, who knew that she could no longer continue to walk through her life in integrity without acting in response to what was happening. She exchanged the precious air miles she had spent years saving for a ticket to Lesbos in Greece, where she was immediately thrown into the chaos of thousands of refugees arriving nightly on an island of 80,000 permanent residents. Amidst the most appalling circumstances, she worked tirelessly among other volunteers to assist, support and provide for the sick, bereaved, the disenfranchised and the homeless, raising money from home, from family, friends and her Facebook community to help those who needed it most. When she returned home, Zoe Wild's life had changed. A former Buddhist nun, interfaith minister, life coach and a meditation teacher, Zoe Wild joins us now to tell us about her experiences and the meditation practice that not only gave her the impetus to make that life-changing decision to go to Greece, but also to found One Light Global, a non-profit organisation which is evolving the way that we approach humanitarian crises around the world. Zoe Wild, welcome.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It's such an honour to be here.
Zoe, watching that video clearly had a massive impact on you. But did you have any idea of what you were going to find when you flew into Lesbos?
Absolutely not. No, I had no idea. When I first saw the video, I just knew that I had to do something. Like you so beautifully said, I knew that there was no way I could go on living in my integrity while this was happening and doing nothing. But I had no idea what to do, which I think is the place where most people stop. So I prayed and meditated. And the next day I woke up and I opened my computer and I went on Facebook. And the first post I saw was someone saying that they were going over there. And so I didn't even know that you could go. So I contacted them and discovered that people were desperately needed on the island. And so I spent my saved up miles on getting a ticket, and I went over there. And I actually thought that it might be just, you know, picking up trash on the beach. I had no idea what they would let someone like me do who was unaffiliated and what the conditions would be, because the EU and Turkey had continued to make agreements and then let them go. So it was completely shocking for me when I landed and 1,000 to 2,000 refugees were arriving every single day on these little rafts and risking their lives and their children's lives. And there were hardly any people there meeting them, helping them in any way. So from the moment I arrived, for the first 2 weeks, I slept literally 1 or 2 hours a night and just would be on the beaches all night, diving boats in with other volunteers, just ordinary people from mainly Europe, but all over the world, but just citizens. And then during the day at the refugee camp, all day just helping people, every 2 feet there would be someone in a desperate situation. And it was shocking to me that the governments weren't there, that the big NGOs weren't there, that the military wasn't there, that no one was helping these people. And they were just regular people like you and me, dying. in an effort to find a safe place to live.
What were the local people doing? I mean, were they trying to help?
That's a great question. So many of them were at that point. It had been years now that they had been dealing with this, and it was just last year that it accelerated so much. So at first there was some resistance and denial of what was happening, and then it sort of broke down, I imagine, like it would anywhere, into lots of wonderful local people who knew that they had to help. They couldn't turn a blind eye. And also some that would try to ignore what was happening. But for the most part, my experience with the local Greeks was that they were incredibly generous and kind. And also, especially on those islands, many of them or their parents or grandparents had also been refugees, and that's how they ended up there.
So when you came back, how soon after your return was it that you founded One Light Global?
So what happened, it's an amazing story of human community and generosity, is that I went over thinking I was just going to go for 2 weeks and slip in and slip out and not tell anyone, really, just, you know, do my service and come back. And instead, what happened was when I got there, like I said, the situation was so dire and the lack of support so shocking that I started just writing on Facebook. I had a large following, you know, 5,000 or so people from my business. And so I just started posting photos of what I was seeing and saying, hey, guys, look, this is really happening. And these are these people, and this is what they're going through. And everyone started sharing it because they knew that they could trust me. And in this day and age, I feel like there's so much distrust of large organizations that you don't know where your money is going if you donate to them. And so very quickly, I raised over $60,000, and I ended up extending my flight and staying over a month. And so by the time I left, I had raised so much money that I sort of had to start an organization, just from a legal and a tax perspective. And so many people had come in and offered help, you know, offered to be my fiscal sponsor, or offered to fill out the application for the organization for me, or offered to be a part of the organization in some way. And it really just felt like a divine path. And though it hadn't been my intention when I went over there, when I returned, I realized life had actually stacked me for this. That ever since I was a small child, I'd wanted to do humanitarian work. And everyone had always said this was the type of work I was cut out for. And all of the trainings and all of the life experiences that I'd been through, which had seemed so unrelated, suddenly came together in this perfect way. It was just divinely orchestrated. I'd done trauma work and bereavement counseling and chaplaincy and been a Buddhist nun, as you said. And I had been at the World Trade Center when it was attacked, and I was in Burma during the uprising. So there were just so many things that were coming together. That just made it a perfect fit.
Did it feel to you as if destiny was calling?
Oh, 100%. 100%. It was. I went there for 2 weeks, and instead my life changed completely. I ended up staying, like I said, over a month, but then it completely changed my life in a way that I could not have foreseen.
Now, how easy or how difficult was it for you to set up the foundation?
It was both. It was both. I would say to set it up, like I said, it felt so divinely orchestrated, and so many angels have come in. One of my friends shared my posts, and an organization, a wonderful organization called Humanity Healing International, saw the post and offered to be my fiscal sponsor until I got my own 501c3. And they really mentored me a lot. So they saved my butt on a few occasions and guided me into how to do that. And then all along the way, there were angels. Another person who also saw my post on Facebook connected me to a wonderful group of lawyers in Los Angeles who volunteered to do our 501c3 application pro bono. And some other volunteers came to Arizona and ended up becoming a part of my team. So in that sense, there was so much and it felt like it would just magically appear when I needed it to help to set up the administrative side of it. And on the other hand, it was like this huge learning curve every single day about so many different things and about, you know, managing a team and the various projects. At first, I just took on every single project because it's so hard to say no. So at this point, we're, you know, putting kids in school and we were building a women's center in Turkey and doing direct aid in Greece and doing direct aid in Turkey and helping refugees in Phoenix. And so there was, and then I was in Lebanon. So it was just really like discovering all of the different laws for the different countries and all the different aspects of what we can do and can't do as an organization in different countries and in this country. And so there was so much to learn every day, and there was so much help along the way.
I should add, you know, our listeners may not know this, but Healing for Humanity is Own Times Magazine's charity. And it's wonderful that they were able to support you, especially in those early days when you were just trying to, you know, get your feet under the table there. So
unbelievable mentors and completely from the goodness of their hearts. They asked for nothing in return, and they just wanted to help the refugees through the work that they knew we were doing, which was so good.
It is amazing when you start something like this and you don't think there's anybody out there, and then people start appearing. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with former Buddhist nun Zoe Wild about her non-profit organisation, One Light Global, which is evolving the way that we approach humanitarian crises around the world. We'll be back in a few moments. Don't go away.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Zoe Wild, One Light Global is founded on the deep belief that our fate is shared and that dividing the world into us and them, the charitable and the needy, is no longer an option. Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. So one of the, like I said, when I was a child, I always wanted to do this sort of work, and I had done volunteering work through my life, but nothing to this extent. But the reason that I've never actually gone into it as a profession was that I felt that this sector of our society was really often divided into the poor, the needy, and the people that were helping them. And something just never sat right about it with me. And while I was in Lesbos, someone posted a quote on my Facebook wall from an Aboriginal elder named Lilia, that said, if you've come to help me, then you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is bound up in mine, then come and let us work together. And that, when I read it, just really hit home. That's the way that I feel about service. It's that we don't do it because there are these poor other people. We do it because they are us, that we are connected, and our fates are incredibly intricately woven. And until we're all living freely and joyfully and safely, none of us are. Because we have to shut down that part of ourselves that knows, that sees someone suffering and reaches out a hand. So, and when we shut that down, we really are losing out on our experience of being alive, and our whole life is impacted by that. So I wanted to create an organization that redefined the charitable sector to be about solidarity rather than charity, to be about co-creating with these people something new. And I really feel that at this time in our human history, the problems that we're facing are global, like global warming, like the displacement of millions of people, of refugees, is going to impact us over here. They have to go somewhere. It's going to change the global economy. It's going to change the environment. And so in order to come up with solutions to these global problems, we need people from every different culture, every different area of the world, to come together and share their ideas and create new solutions. Some people call this like synergy and emergence. You know, we need to bring together these new ideas to have a new idea emerge that we haven't thought of before that will help everyone. And I actually think we also saw that in this election in America, this past election, you know, that really we need to come together to find solutions that cover everyone.
On your website, it says that 110,000 refugees from all over the world were expected in the USA last year. Was that figure reached?
I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Was the figure reached? Did America accept 110,000 refugees or less or more?
I don't 100% know, but I'm pretty sure that we did. If it's on the website, then we did reach that number. Many of the people that come in are not, they don't make it very public because of sentiments against refugees. Mm-hmm. But I know that we have hundreds and hundreds of families coming into Phoenix, Arizona, for example, sometimes every month. So there are actually a huge number of refugees coming here, which most people don't even realize. And that's why we've directed now a lot of our donations and programming to help refugees in the U.S. as they resettle and integrate.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I spend a lot of time in Europe and I've just come back from England, and I know how many refugees are, you know, coming into various countries in England, all of which are a darn sight smaller than America. And people tend to turn their eyes to America and say, hey, you know, you've got a lot of space. You appear to be a wealthy country. What are you doing to help us? And if they don't make it public, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, well, even if they did, in my opinion, it's a paltry number compared to what we could be accepting. And I really do feel that we should be able to accept more. And I think it's important to recognize that it's our government and not generally the people that are limiting this number.
Yes.
Because so many people have reached out to me. I mean, you know, hundreds probably of people have reached out to me saying, I'd love to sponsor a refugee family, or our neighborhood would like to sponsor a refugee family. And we don't have that program the way that they do in Canada, for example, where people can get together, and as long as they can prove they have a certain amount of money, they can sponsor a family. Here you can do that, but only after they've already been accepted to the United States.
Are you concerned about what might happen to immigration policy and America's ability to, you know, take in refugees once Donald Trump is inaugurated?
Absolutely. I am, but I am taking it day by day. And I think that it just makes it all the more important that we are here now and that we are helping the people that are here to stay here. I don't think that he will, you know, he says that he wants to kick out a lot of illegal immigrants that have broken laws, but I don't think he'll be able to remove new refugees that have already been accepted. But I do think that it's an important time for us to spread awareness and compassion. And that's a huge part of One Light to me. That's work that I had done before, is working with groups in conflict to understand each other and build empathy and integrate in a way that still honors and preserves all cultures.
Now, you offer all kinds of help to families when they arrive in the USA, providing food, cleaning supplies, you know, all kinds of things, houseware, furniture, you know, support, workshops. Refugees must be suffering tremendous psychological and emotional trauma and distress. It's unbelievable that so many governments do not seem to understand how important it is to provide mental health services and help. I read a blog post on your website, and it just feels like criminal that so many people are ignoring that factor. What do you do to offer that kind of mental health support to refugees?
Yeah, it's such a crucial element of what's needed and of what we do. And I would love to be able to, that's for 2017, one of our main goals is to be able to offer a lot more of that support. We actually had a refugee in Phoenix recently try to commit suicide because he couldn't find a job and couldn't support his family. So they don't offer any sort of training for that. So we want to provide workshops that bring people together. And right now in Phoenix, I think we'll talk about it in a little bit, but with the Women's Center, that will be a big part of what we're offering there, is support for women to just even share their stories. I'm a facilitator for Healing of Memories, which was a program, it's a global nonprofit organization started by Father Michael Lapsley in South Africa. And it's for bringing people together to heal trauma through simply sharing their stories with other people who have been through similar events. And it was started for people that have been through apartheid, but it has gone all over the world, and we do it with veterans in Phoenix now. And it's been just one of the most powerful formats I've ever seen. So that's one of my goals for 2017, is to be doing these workshops with refugees in
Give
Phoenix.
Us some examples of what a donation can provide. I don't think people understand what is a very small sum for most of us can provide so much for a refugee.
Oh, well, every single dollar counts. I know people always say that, but it's so true. So when refugees come to America, they receive the federal government gives an organization like IRC. There's 9 organizations that the government works with. So they'll give an organization like IRC, International Rescue Committee, $950 per person in that family. So let's say it's a family of 5, 2 parents and 3 kids. Generally, one of the parents is sick or injured. And they give them $950 per person. That's a one-time fee, and that goes to IRC. And then IRC is federally mandated to spend that money on a certain specific thing. So like filling the cupboards with food, cleaning supplies, furniture, a month's rent. And by the time that they've covered those supplies, generally all of the money has been spent. And so then the family is put into this apartment, which has maybe enough food for a month and cleaning supplies. But they have to then find a job and pay the next month's rent and pay for their medical bills and pay for all of these things. But they don't speak the language. As you said, they're traumatized. They don't have a car. So even $5 helps us buy simple things like food and toys and socks and supplies like that. More money can help with, you know, educational supplies too. Larger sums of money. We've had people donate $500 towards a car for a family. It makes an enormous difference. It means that they can work. larger donations can go towards, like $1,000 can put on a workshop, like we were just talking about, for trauma healing or self-defense classes or psychotherapy. There's really no end to the need, and so every single dollar helps. And we're always happy to have people specify, you know, I want my money to go to a bicycle for a kid or anything like that.
Now, I noticed on the website, they also have people can buy bracelets, Be the Light bracelets. Tell us about
those. That's right. So that's one of my favorite projects that we do. The women in Turkey were making these bracelets one day, and they're so beautiful. Everybody loves them. And so now we've started a project where they can make the bracelets, and people can buy them for $15 or $20, and the money goes directly to the women. We're going to be moving it to Phoenix and having the women refugees there. We're setting up a place for them to do it, so we'll have to adjust the, I think it will be $15, but it might be $20. And then they get paid per bracelet, and also some of the money goes back to One Light, and some of the money goes to promoting the bracelets. But they're just such a beautiful thing, and the women are so happy, they tell me, to have something meaningful to do and to create something beautiful that they know another woman is enjoying. They say they're American sisters.
It must do wonders,
that they
too,
created.
You know, for their self-esteem to know that it's not all about charity, you know, that they can do something with dignity and earn, you know, towards their own, you know, evolution.
Exactly. Social enterprise is really a core part of the new model. From charity to solidarity.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Zoe Wild, former Buddhist nun, meditation teacher, and founder of the non-profit organization One Light Global. We'll be back in a few moments. Don't go away.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off.
We'd do anything for kids, yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger near you. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Zoe Wild, I want to talk about meditation because it does play such a pivotal role in your life. Before we start discussing that, I just want to ask you, you were a Buddhist nun and you lived in a monastery in Burma for nearly 2 years. What influenced you to make the transition from Buddhist nun to life coach and meditation teacher?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Well, I had been in Burma about 2 years, and it was really my teacher. It was a part of me that just knew it was time to go back. I was pretty free, and I knew that in order to really test this freedom, I had to go put myself up against the highs and lows of you might say, the real world outside of the protection of the monastery. But I also, my teacher said, you know, you can't live here forever. You're American, and you need to go practice in the world. And then the last part was that I just really wanted to share. I went to the monastery because of a lot of really intense suffering that I had felt from the time I was a child, and looking for meaning in the world and knowing something was there that I just couldn't find. And I really wanted to share that with other people that might be suffering in the way that I was, that there were teachings that could be helpful to them if they desired.
Now, when you returned to the West, you were shocked to see how differently meditation is taught here. Tell us, what is the difference?
When I came back to the West, it felt like the meditation courses that I went to were almost counterproductive in that they were very controlling of the mind. And there seemed to be a lot of ego and materialism in the spiritual community. So there were a lot of beautiful teachers and teachings, and there were a lot of benefits that people were getting. But it was limited to the meditation cushion, and it was limited, it felt like, to a certain outfit or a certain way of talking. I used to call it therapist talking. You know, like it sounded like everyone was a therapist that was a meditation teacher. But you had to kind of look a certain way and act a certain way, and it was a bit socioeconomically divided and racially divided. And the way that it's taught in the East, everything is meditation. The way that I was taught, every moment is meditation. The cushion is just where we start because it's easier if you're sitting to watch your mind and your heart and your body. But as soon as you get that base down, you really need to bring it to your attention no matter what you're doing. And it's also, meditation is a way to return to our natural state. So however your own natural state is of speaking and being and doing, it's everything. It brings everything alive.
So you came up with your own solution that you teach. Tell us about that.
Well, after 7 or 8 years of being asked, I finally decided to share really what these teachings were. I can't say that I came up with it, but to share what I was taught and the way that I interpreted it, because it seemed to be helpful to a lot of people who were having trouble with this silence your mind or just sit still for an hour, and really about reconnecting to our natural state. I call it your wild self, which is untamed, undomesticated you before you were conditioned. And I also believe that humans are part of nature, and that everything in nature, when allowed to continue and to be according to its own truth, comes into harmony with its surroundings. And I feel that humans, when they are allowed to express in their natural way, will come into harmony with each other and with their surroundings. And the reason we have so much trouble is because we're not doing it. We're not being natural. So to me, this is not only a way to inner peace, but a way to global peace.
So how you have this on your website, you say that you can awaken your life in 4 weeks. How can meditation do that?
Well, meditation in its simplest definition is really just bringing awareness, is being awareness to every aspect of your life, to every moment. And so when you learn how to release the lack of awareness and to release the things that we've put on to distract ourselves and the desires and the distractions and the aversions, and just to be with what is and get curious and wonder, there's this incredible aliveness that comes. And because, so once, it's really a one-step process. You do that, and then that changes every aspect of your life. It changes your relationship to yourself. It changes your relationship to other people. It changes your activities. It changes the way you relate to the world. It changes your relationship to your emotions and your body. And just everything, every single aspect is touched by this one aspect of relaxing into your being and allowing things to be as they are and meeting them with this wild, natural aliveness that's in every single one of us.
You've taken on a huge task working towards creating a world where every single person knows their essential liberated nature and humanity lives in global unity. How does meditation help you stay centered and on the path?
I literally could not do this work without meditation, and I have to say I've learned that the hard way. So one of the things was that when I was in Greece and Turkey and Lebanon this time in 2016, doing this work with refugees and really coming across, I've worked as a chaplain, I've worked in prisons, I've worked with war veterans, active duty. I've never heard stories that I heard. I've never seen things like I saw. And without my base in meditation, I would have just been thrown into absolute despair and inner chaos, which I saw happen actually to many beautiful volunteers. And also there's like a savior complex that can come that I, you know, who knows without the meditation, but the meditation allowed me to just be with what was happening and meet it with love. And then let it go and know that, you know what, I actually, we can have these beautiful aspirations to spread awareness and unity and compassion in the world. But it's not my job. I have this aspiration and I do the work to do it, but then I can't stay attached to the result. And, you know, sometimes I'm better at that than others, of course. So really enabling me to meet people with love in a incredibly intense and stressful situation, and the feedback that I got from many refugees, I get teary thinking about it, was just that. It was, you know, more than anything that you gave us, more than the tent or the bottle of water or the food, it was the love. It was being seen as and treated as a human that gave us the strength to keep going. It was the smile. It was the look in the eyes. And so what enables me to do that is meditation, is being in touch with that part of myself and seeing that in everyone else. And without that, I just would be lost.
Do you offer to teach meditation to the refugees you work with?
You know, I haven't. We do meditation and yoga workshops. So sometimes I'll lead them in a guided meditation, which they love. But because the majority of them are Muslim, though a lot of them are Christian, I haven't met any Buddhist refugees from the Middle East. But I'm usually the first sort of Buddhist they've met. But I don't offer it in that way. I don't offer it in like an extended course. But we offer workshops for women where they can do a little yoga and some guided meditations, and they've loved it. Actually, they've had a wonderful response to it. And it's not religious, it's secular.
Yeah, I would have thought that it would be a really helpful tool, especially for those, you know, that are suffering psychologically, you know, give them a place to go for peace and clarity.
Yeah, we'll often focus it. I sort of let guided meditations just come through spontaneously, but they'll often revolve around this one light, the one light that's in everything and the one light that's in them, and returning to that place within themselves, because they're superhumans, you know what I mean? They're doing what they've been through is mind-boggling. And what they deal with on a day-to-day basis with their children. You know, many of them have lost their husbands and their families, and now they're alone and they're young and they have young children and they're in a country they don't know and they have an uncertain future and they're grieving And to just make it day to day is so hard. And so to me, they're my heroes. And for them to be able to continue to return to trust and to presence and compassion, they are some of the most generous, most kind people I've ever met, most gracious, despite what they've been through. So, or maybe because of what they've been through. So, yeah, it's my privilege to share anything like that with them, and I feel that I get at least as much in return, more.
You say that the path to world peace is through meeting every individual from the belief that we are one human family, that we all have one light inside of us, and that we can help each other to create a better world for all. What suggestions can you offer for how we can practice that?
A daily meditation practice is a wonderful thing. I think the more one person understands themselves, the more paradoxically that they also understand other people. When we see our own fears and our own desires and our own fragility and our own strength, we begin to understand that that's in everyone. So daily meditation is a wonderful practice. Another one is go out and help people, talk to people, start conversations, just get to know people. Not about reading about, you know, their region or their culture or their religion, but really just meeting people one-on-one. And especially if you can volunteer and get to know them and just talk to them, is an amazing way to really start to understand that we all have so much more in common than we have that's different. So I would just say, yeah, go out, meet people, talk to people. Help them. Let them help you.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Zoe Wild, founder of the non-profit organization One Light Global, about the refugee crisis and why dividing the world into us and them, the charitable and the needy, is no longer an option. We'll be back after this break.
More conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Zoe Wild, you talked about the trauma healing workshops and cultural integration workshops that you offer. Tell us a bit about those. What are you actually doing in those workshops?
In the trauma healing workshops, like I said, at this point, they're mainly doing story sharing. It's a model where they come together with people who have been through similar things and often from different cultures. That's my favorite, is to mix people together because, like I said, then we see how much we have in common. and share their stories. And through that, they take one step forward on the healing process. It's incredibly powerful. And then in the cultural integration, it's a couple-day workshop where it's really, again, about learning about each other's cultures, hearing each other's stories, seeing how much is similar and building empathy. And then there's also forgiveness pieces when that is appropriate, and really a powerful coming together in forgiveness so that we can move forward in a new way together.
Do you lead these workshops, or do you bring in other facilitators and experts?
Both. I both lead them, and we'll bring in other people. And we've been talking to HeartMath about doing workshops with them. Like I said, there's some self-defense people we're bringing in, and that always incorporates also healing from trauma. So yeah, we're totally open to working with other people and love partnering with organizations that share our values.
What would you say are the things that refugees most need? Because, you know, apart from housing, food, money, work, there's a huge language thing. They have to learn the language as well. And, no matter how skilled they may have been in the country that they came from, it must be hard for them to get jobs. So, you know, where can we most help them?
Yeah, so in abroad and here are a little different. So in Turkey, we're providing education, and it's only $250 for an entire year for education for a child. And to me, that is the most important thing that we can possibly do, is to educate this entire generation of children that is going to grow up and hopefully go back to Syria and rebuild their country, and Iraq and Afghanistan as well. So those children from those countries. So education to me is absolutely crucial. And then in America, these families, they most need cars so they can get to work. The language classes are great. We've been trying to give them like tablets where they can use, they can put programs on them so they can learn together. But if there's anyone local that wants to get involved and just go visit with them and talk to them, that's a wonderful way for them to learn the language as well. Obviously, the kids pick it up pretty quickly in school, and then they teach the parents. And sometimes we'll go around and tape the English words to everything in their house, you know, like lamp, door, fork. But the iPads are a really wonderful thing, and the Kindles, and then putting a language program on those. And jobs, they really need jobs. So working with this, helping either by donation, volunteer, or purchasing a bracelet, any way that someone wants to get involved in social enterprise, or if they have jobs to offer the refugees, those are really the things that they need the most. And then the psychological workshops.
How do you allocate the funds that come in? Because it must be so hard, you know, you're supporting students in Turkey, you know, you're starting women's centres here in America. It must be very hard to say, well, we can only put so much money here because we've got to put some money over there. How do you do that? How do you make those decisions?
That's a great question. That was definitely one of my learning curves. It's so hard to choose. So one of the ways I've gotten around that is on the website, when you donate, you can actually choose where the funds are allocated. So that makes it really simple. If someone says, you know, I want this to go to education, or I want this to go to women, then we'll do that. And often it's groups that get together. And so they're an educational group that will then donate, you know, 10 kids tuitions, or a women's group that donated. We had a wonderful group, Awakening Women, led by Camille Arkta, that donated thousands and thousands of dollars to the Women's Center in Turkey. They were just wonderful. So that's generally what we do. And other than that, it's sort of just whatever the most pressing need is of the moment. And sometimes we'll do a drive for a particular, one of the particular projects. But what we're hoping is through the social enterprise to be self-sufficient so that they can, that all of the money would go, will be a third of the money would go to the refugees directly for the bracelets or whatever project we're working on. A third of the money would go back into One Life for the other projects. And like I said, a third would go into promoting those so that we can continue growing in that way.
Do you,
and for supply,
do you get involved with local businesses, organizations, stores, and ask them for help? I mean, you know, in Europe, we've seen this huge initiative where stores are no longer throwing away food that's at its sell-by date, but giving it to shelters and refugees and people who, you know, can eat it before, you know, just because it's criminal to throw such, you know, food away before its sell-by date, etc. And there are things like most of the supermarkets in England, and I've seen them in Canada too, they will get engaged with local local foundations. They'll agree to give so much to them, and what they do is when people shop there, they give them a token, and that token, I don't know whether it's worth a penny or a dollar, they get the opportunity to put it into a box. So the shopper puts it into the box of their choice to support, you know, one of many local charities. Do you find that local businesses want to engage with you in that way?
I do. I'm sure there are so many more than we've had the chance to get to, and that's another thing. If any of your listeners, you know, really want to be a part of One Light and get involved, we'd love to hear from them because there's so much to do and so many wonderful ideas like this. One of the things I really learned in Lesbos, in Greece, was everybody has a gift, and we need all of us. This is also part of the idea behind solidarity and synergy and creating a new world together. Is everyone has a different skill. So there's, you know, the design student from Germany who's taking life vests and turning them into bags for the refugees to use. And then there's the doctors that are healing people. And then there's, you know, there's just so many different skills. Everybody has a different skill. There's the artist who's spreading awareness. There's a million ways that we can help, and we each have a gift. I like to think of it as we're each the hands of Guan Yin. And so I love all these ideas, and we do as much as we can, and that we could always do more. But a lot of what we've been doing with local businesses so far is just with the bracelets, they've been wanting to sell them. So and they go faster than we can make them, which is wonderful. So Chai Spot in Sedona and a number of other businesses are starting to sell the bracelets. And I love your ideas of working with, grocery stores and all sorts of different supplies to help.
Do you have a wish list of things that you would like to accomplish in the next year or two?
Yes. Definitely getting the Women's Center up and running in Phoenix so that new refugees can have that as a place, not only to make a little money and support themselves, but to gather together and spend time with other women and to learn skills and learn the language. That is a huge wish list of mine. Also, it just impacts so many lives to do more of these workshops and to be able to travel wherever people might want to invite us to really help cultures integrate is a huge wish list item. Putting more kids in school, as many kids in school as possible in Turkey. And I'd like to also start working in Lebanon with the girls that are being sold into sexual slavery. So those are some of the initial projects that are big wish list items for this year.
So you've taken on a task for life, haven't you?
It seems like it. It seems like it's taken me on. I joke about it. And anytime I've said it's too much and thrown my hands up in the air, some new angel comes in and makes it impossible to quit. So, for example, recently we had the Prince and Princess of Ethiopia just joined our board of directors, and it's such a huge honor. So we may be starting also to work in Ethiopia So it's just, it's amazing how when you're on the path, it just happens. It happens with or without you.
Do you get asked by any official bodies that are endeavouring to assist in this crisis to give them the benefit of your experience?
Do I get asked by Buddha?
Anyone, you know, any organisations, official organisations, you know, to speak and talk about your experiences and share what, you know, what you've discovered and what you find helps? Because you have a lot of experience of what these people need.
Yeah, we actually have a wonderful Buddhist organization, Threads of Wisdom, who found us and is partnering with us to make Buddhist book covers. They want the refugees to make Buddhist book covers for some ancient wisdom books that are disintegrating in China, and they need book covers. And so they were, their guru, I guess, was saying that he wanted refugees to do it, so they reached out to us.
That's wonderful. Zoe, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. It's been a delightful conversation, and I really hope that our listeners will feel moved to support your organisation, onelightglobal.org. And also, if you're interested in Awaken Your Life in 4 weeks, Wild Meditation Program, you can find out more at Zoe's website, wildmeditation.com. Zoe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It was an honor.
You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I hope you'll join me again next week when I'll be sharing some very welcome evidence from a riveting new book that will delight women and some men by explaining why fat is not your fault. Till then, it's goodbye from me.